episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt is finally back. Matt, welcome back. And Jess is here with me. And this is probably my favorite episode to record every year, the race preview qualifying review episode. So let's dive right into it here, guys. And I will turn it over to the newly married Matt to start it off.
All right. Well, glad to be back. Had a great time in Iceland and enjoyed getting married and all that good stuff, and appreciate everybody's messages on social media. You guys have done a killer job in Indianapolis, so my hat's off to you guys. You guys have really been busting your butts and delivering great content to all of our great listeners out there. So I, as a person who's been listening for the last 2.5-3 weeks, have really appreciated the content you guys have done. So great job. But yeah, there's so much to cover. Obviously, we're going to start with bump day, which happened on Sunday. And we've devoted a considerable amount of time to this podcast to discussing McLaren and Fernando Alonso. We're starting with the Fred Watch way back when. And it's only fitting that we're going to spend a little bit of time here talking about what happened on bump day. Jess, let's just get right to it. Your initial reaction to the Fernando Alonso and McLaren getting bumped from the Indianapolis 500.
Super disappointed, obviously. I was so excited to see him come back. But, I mean, you know, I he didn't make it. He wasn't fast enough. So I kind of, I mean, what else can you say? Like, it is disappointing to me as an Alonso fan, but it is what it is, man. We'll see you next year, maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't know what else to say other than it's really just, you know, such a comedy of errors. I think I'm stealing Jenna Fryer's words there. I'm sorry. You know, from start to finish, everything they did, they messed up, and some of it was silly stuff, which I'm sure we'll get to, you know, at some point in this discussion. But if you had asked me a week ago, would they get bumped? I said, probably not. You know, they might not start up at the front, but they're not going to get bummed. But does it surprise me at the same time? No, not really.
Right. And you could kind of see it coming, but it's like you just failed to believe that it would actually happen. You think something was going to happen. There was rumors about them buying setups, which, you know, you thought maybe would help. And we'll get to that in a second here. But I just, you know, in our living room with my parents, we were just stunned. We just couldn't believe it. And not only that, but to get bumped by Kyle Kaiser of all people, it's just like, are you kidding me? So I don't know. It's just, it's really hard to believe that, you know, we've been talking about it for 6-7 months now, and for them to not make it, I'm still a little stunned. And right away, of course, one of the immediate discussions that happened was, you know, just kind of like last year with Jay Howard, you know, making the field, but Hinchcliffe not. If Hinchcliffe would replace Howard, that was one of the media discussions. This year was kind of the same. You know, would McLaren buy their way back into the field? Ultimately, it was decided that, you know, they would not. But Mike, should they have bought their way back into the field?
No. You know, I think that would have done some harm to their reputation, which is already crumbling as we speak. So I think in the end, whether it was, you know, Fernando's decision, like he's claiming, or whether it was, you know, somebody else, I think it was the right call in the end.
In this particular case, I have to agree, because I'm going to take Fernando at his word and say that it was his decision, just because of some of the rumors that were going around. I feel like it probably was his decision, and I think in this particular case, it was the right decision because he really had nothing to gain from it. You know, he's not full time, so he's not going to be gaining the points, starting in what we could only imagine would be a fairly, far back position, wouldn't set him up to have a good run. So I think in this case, no, he should not have bought his way back in. So I think it was the correct decision.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you. And so you guys both touched on it as far as Alonso's the one who kind of said, no, Should that decision ever have gotten to Alonso? Or I guess it, to me, it was a little strange that it was Alonso who kind of pumped the brakes on it, but should it have been Zach Brown? Should it have been Jill DeFerrin? Should it have been the board of directors? I mean, is it kind of strange that it came to Alonso to say no in that decision, Jess?
I don't think so at all. I mean, if I were the one having to be stuck in the seat, I would want it to be my decision. I think that the Ryan Hunter Ray deal kind of shows what happens when it's not your decision. If I remember correctly, he wasn't overly excited to have had a seat bought for him. I mean, obviously he ran. But I think that it should be up to the driver. I mean, they're the ones that have to basically have their face out there, you know, after failing to qualify and then having your team throw a bunch of money at somebody, I think it would be a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, I'm with Jess. You know, it's a, you know, first and foremost, it's a team decision, but any driver should have a say in this. But when the driver is as experienced as Fernando Alonso, if he doesn't want to, you know, if he doesn't want to buy in, the team should go, okay, we're not going to do it. And in this case, they understood.
Yeah. And to Jess's point, if I remember correctly, I think Ryan Hunter Ray had a pretty miserable 2011 Indy 500. I don't think he did very well in the race at all. So I don't really know where that got them per se.
It got him points.
I guess. Yeah, there's that, I guess. But yeah, as far as the race itself, he looked pretty miserable out there. And then as far as them missing the field as a whole, as again, we've touched on this many, many times, Alonso himself has been or had successfully brokered a deal in Spain to get the Indy 500 on broadcast. There's just the worldwide attention that McLaren brings. So Mike, as a whole, is this bad for IndyCar that McLaren and Fernando Alonso missed the Indy 500?
No. I mean, yeah, it's bad for McLaren, but I think from an IndyCar perspective around the world, people are going, wow, this is very hard to do. Unlike a couple of years ago when Alonso had a strong car with Andretti and he, you know, was safely, you know, in the fast nine, I believe, and, you know, led some laps. So I think it'll open people's eyes and they go, maybe we should pay attention to this really competitive series.
I pretty much wholeheartedly agree with you. I don't think it is bad at all for IndyCar, and definitely not for the 500. It just goes to show people who may be a casual fan that the Indy 500 is the real deal, and you have to bring your A game, and you have to come prepared, and you have to have the best drivers, and sometimes even the best drivers can't pull it out. So I think that if anything, it could be a positive for the 500 because it makes people more interested, especially in the qualifying. The whole weekend, honestly, it drew a lot of attention to both days of qualifying.
Right. And I would agree with you guys and just say that the race is bigger than one team or one driver. I mean, we've seen Penske not make the field. We've seen the best teams and the best drivers split off into another series, or I guess unwillingly split off into another series and not being able to come to the Indy 500, and it's still survived. And I don't see, I mean, I'd sure see some fans maybe not wanting to tune in now, but as a whole, I don't see a major impact coming, at least in my opinion. And so right before the Sunday qualifying, it was Paul Tracy, it was Racer Meg, it was a couple other people reporting that the McLaren team had gone to Team Penske for setup help and to Andretti Autosport for damper help, and then a couple other teams for help in general, including to Ed Carpenter Racing to see if they could buy one of their cars, which Ed Carpenter Racing did decline. Jess, in your book, do you cry foul on that one, or do you think all is fair when it comes to bump day?
Okay, well, first, let me say that we were in the press conference after the qualifying went down, and Roger Penske was there himself and said, no, they did not buy a setup from them. So don't know if they bought a setup from someplace else or whatever. And the dampers, obviously, like, I didn't get close enough to see. But as far as that goes, I mean, I have always been kind of a traditionalist when it comes to the 500. You bring what you brought. So I think that if they want to pay for it, sure, let them pay for it. The only thing it's going to do is help that other team. And obviously we can see that it doesn't always work out. So if you want to throw the money out there and try to make the field, go for it. I mean, this is the 500. You do whatever you need to do to try to make the field.
I hate that I'm agreeing this much with Jess in the first 6 or 7 minutes of the episode, but yeah, I mean, listen, guys, back in the day, jumped into other people's cars to get in qualifying, and I'm sure there's other, you know, there's plenty of more examples like that that just aren't coming to my mind right now. So if they want to buy a setup, if they want to buy a car, if they want to buy dampers, if they're willing to spend the money, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I'd call it maybe questionable, but I'd also say that you can't hate the player, you got to hate the game. So, I mean, if it's not against the rules, then I guess, you know, have at it. So I guess at the end of the day, I don't see a problem with it too much. It's maybe more discouraging than anything, but not, I guess, illegal or anything like that. So as long as it's not illegal, I guess go for it. You know, Zach Brown deserves a lot of credit for being the kind of the architect to get McLaren back into IndyCar. He's taken a lot of grief this week. He's been, to his credit, very straightforward with the press and, you know, saying that, you know, we screwed up and things like that. Mike, do you see his job security in any sort of trouble at the moment at McLaren?
I don't see how it's not in trouble. I don't know if he'll get fired like some are speculating. You know, he did bring a lot of sponsorship on board, which, you know, so they are profitable, I guess. And you know, at the end of the day, money is important. But he makes one more wrong move or, you know, paints the car the wrong shade of orange one more time, he's as good as gone.
Ah, man, I kind of disagree. I mean, they've already kind of got rid of, oh gosh, what was his name? I've totally just drawn a blank. Burnley? Yes, thank you. I'm so sorry. My brain just died on me there. So they've already gotten rid of somebody. Obviously, we don't know the inner workings of the team all that well. So can we blame everything that happened on Zach Brown? I don't think we can. The one thing I think that Zach needs to do is sit down and take a good look at this entire month and reevaluate how they're going to approach this race moving forward, if they're going to approach this race moving forward. Because obviously they were approaching it in not a way that was productive for them. So they need to just kind of revamp everything. They have the right pieces in place. They just need to learn what to do with it. And frankly, I think Zach is a good leader there. I don't know. I just don't think he's in trouble. I thought he was at first, and then I rethought it, and now I think he'll be okay, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I think Zach's a great leader, and I really appreciate everything he does. Reading Jenna Fryer's article this week, and I know we like to give her some crap, but it was actually a really good article. If you hadn't gotten the chance to read that yet, a quick rundown is that when they showed up to the Texas test in March, the McLaren car wasn't the correct shade of orange. It was orange. It just wasn't papaya orange. But that was Carlin's car that Alonso was using. But when they showed up to the speedway, it was McLaren's car that was the primary car that Alonso crashed, which happened to be right in the middle of one of Jess and Mike's recordings, conveniently enough. And so when they rolled out that secondary car, it was not finished being painted to the correct papaya orange, costing them, I think, a full day of on-track action. When they showed up to the Texas test, they didn't have a steering wheel that was correct or something along those lines. When they went out for one of the final practices before qualifying, the gearbox was too low because when they, you know, got some setup help, they didn't convert it correctly to the right measurements. They've had two or three electronic issues during the month of May. I think I'm missing a couple of technical issues they've been having. And again, like we've been saying, it's not all on Zach Brown to do all that. You know, obviously he trusts the people that he's hired to figure all that out, like Bob Fernley, but at the end of the day, he's the one that hired them. So you can kind of say, yeah, it's not Zach Brown's fault. And I think he should definitely, I personally think he should still be employed. However, I don't know how long his leash is going forward if they, you know, have a cataclysmic failure again next Indy 500. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on Jenna Fryer's article. I mean, I know Mike's been poking fun at it a little bit with the papaya orange. I mean, isn't that the most absurd thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just, I'm at a loss for words, really, you know, that a team can, you know, not have the correct steering wheels, that they delay a test because the car is the wrong color. Just, I mean, it's really just, you know, great work by Jenna, but just really embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, that word pretty much sums it all up.
And especially when you see Kaiser's car, the one they ended up qualifying with, if you look where the new safety device is and towards the front of the cockpit there, it's like all sorts of different colors because they kind of did like a patchwork job on it. You see McLaren, they won't run their car because it's not papaya orange. I just don't get it. Very, very poor form on their part. Last question about McLaren, I promise. So when Alonso qualified in 2017, I distinctly remember people on social media, especially those of the Formula One type, saying that, oh, Alonso can roll up into Indianapolis and, you know, qualify, I think it was like seventh or eighth or something, and then race so well in the race that if any he can do it, anybody can do it, and that all IndyCar drivers are a joke because Alonso can do it in his first ever race. Jess, what do you think now? Now that Alonso's bumped, what do you think it says about the strength of the IndyCar field?
Oh, I think it speaks volumes. Obviously, I think everybody who has been focused more on IndyCar has always known that IndyCar is tough. Like, coming to this place is no joke. And also that he had the absolute best of the best equipment for his last go here. So I think it speaks volumes to show that when he doesn't have everything going his exact specific way, that unfortunately he didn't make the race. I think it definitely shows the depth of the field. And I'm pleased with it. And even as much as I wanted to see him race, it made for one heck of a story.
Yeah. And obviously it's given us plenty to talk about in the first, 18 minutes or so of the episode, but yeah, no, I think that point's exactly right. You know, those who thought he made IndyCar drivers look subpar, you know, now are looking pretty silly when you're putting a car that's, you know, much tougher to drive on a team that's, you know, has no Andretti level help. And he struggled. And I think Fernando's a great driver, but I think this opened up his eyes and many people's eyes as to how difficult this sport really is.
Should we make McLaren a new drinking term for episodes? I think,
God,
I mean,
no.
Hopefully going forward, it's going to be a little less.
there's always going to be a Fred watch.
Yes. Yeah. it will continue for sure. And we will get the same will they, won't they from McLaren for another 8 months. Maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed, full time next year. But we will definitely keep you guys in the loop on that. But I think for now, the McLaren talks are kind of dead for a little bit here until we hear more news from them, but we'll keep you guys in the loop. But moving on to the rest of the bump day, how about Kyle Kaiser? Fantastic job getting into the field in the backup car with, again, no sponsors in Yumco's Racing. It'll be his second Indy 500. Sage Karam did sneak in there, did have a stressful week, but you know, when it came down to it, put it all on the line and got in there. And James Hinchcliffe, a great comeback story, didn't make the field last year, crashed the car on the first day of qualifying, but did manage to hold it together and get into the field as well. Mike, what's the best story of those three about the final three making it into the field? Do you have a personal favorite out of those three?
Wow. It's really tough to pick because I think they're all, you know, incredibly compelling in their own way. You know, Kaiser with the amazing team effort, Karam, who was pretty unconfident in the car for most of the week and part of the weekend, and Hinchcliffe, who wrecked the car on what looked like was a promising qualifying run. If I'm going to pick, and I'm sorry guys that I'm picking first, but I'm going to go Kyle Kaiser. You know, the team going into 24 hours before 500 practice started had no sponsor. There was questions if they were going to race. There was probably a lot of confidence issues within in the team, wondering, you know, what's going to happen to us. Then they go out, they have a solid week of practice until Kaiser has that nasty wreck, and then the speculation starts happening again. They get everything done at 5 o'clock in the morning, and by the skin of their teeth, they bump out Fernando Alonso. I think everything about that story needs to be on an ESPN 30 for 30 in a couple of years.
I mean, you're not wrong. It was definitely an amazing, we'll call it almost a comeback story, because I don't think anybody really, after the struggle on Saturday, saw him actually making it into the field. So it was pretty impressive. There was a lot of yelling and screaming on pit lane for sure. So it was really fun to be there for that. I'm going to go with Hinch though. Obviously last year, getting bumped out was probably one of the low points of his career. And boy, we thought we were going to see it again this year after that accident. Obviously super glad that he was okay. He was obviously very disappointed in what had happened, and he was pretty sure that we wouldn't see him until Sunday. And then somehow, miracle of miracles, car got done Saturday, his backup car, and they went out and tried and tried and tried, and unfortunately didn't get in. He comes back on Sunday, and he had a heck of a car under him. Those guys did a lot of amazing work, and just to see obviously him get in and the relief on his face was just really good to see for him after last year.
Yeah. And before just for argument's sake, I'll go with Sage Karam. But before I get to that, just a real quick comment on James Hinchcliffe. I was of the opinion that it was almost like a job saving qualifying effort for him, because last year, you know, there was the team not really getting him back in the line as soon as they should have. And then when they did get him back in the line and sent him out, there was the issue with mechanical issue that's forced him back in right away. And it was just kind of a cluster, you know what, on the pit lane. And it really screwed him, to be honest. I mean, I don't think last year was all his fault. Again, that first run wasn't as great as it should have been, but you know, that's where you get the chance to requalify. So I think the team really let him down. So that's kind of where he kind of got a pass on that. Had he not made the field this year, though, I think that would have been squarely on his shoulders. And not making the Indy 500 two years in a row, whether it's your fault or not, I do believe earns you a pink slip. And so I was really concerned after Saturday that if he had not made the field, that we wouldn't have known about the future of James Hinchcliffe at Arrowsmith Peterson Motorsports. So for him to make the field, I think, is a huge sigh of relief for me, because I do appreciate him in at that team. And hopefully going forward, they can build something really solid. So I'm really glad that he made it. But with Sage Karam, again, he did not have a very good week. He was really nervous to get in the car on Fast Friday. I had Hildebrand get in there just to make sure everything was okay, because that's how on edge he was. Didn't look all that good on Saturday, but to come out Sunday and to put in the fastest time out of the six who were desperate to get in the field, I think says a lot about his courage and commitment to just, you know, take the car and stuff it into a corner and see what it'll do. And you could hear it in his voice, his relief coming down the front straight. He was just so excited and so amped, and to be the first one out of the six to be secured into the field officially was a huge relief for him. And I know there is a lot of Sage Karam fans out there. So it's good to see a young talent like him continue to do or get in the field in Indy 500, but hopefully now he can convert it into result. Did look good in that, you know, kind of race preparation practice session. So I don't know, Mike, should we make that our Twitter poll for the week? Who had the best story?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. I think, again, there, I don't think there is a wrong answer there, but definitely congrats to all three of them. Kind of to pivot though, unfortunately we do got to touch on the three that didn't make it. So we've spent enough time on Alonso. And then also joining Alonzo going home was Pato Award, the rookie, and then Max Chilton. For those keeping track at home, that's two Carlin drivers and then a McLaren team that had a Carlin partnership. So, Jess, unfortunately, you know, again, Chilton and Award are going home. Where does Carlin go from here? Or do you think they're still going to be sticking around in IndyCar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said before, I kind of touched on, like, this is not someplace that you can come and be unprepared. I'm not saying that they necessarily were totally unprepared, but they may have bit off more than they can chew with three cars. They just weren't ready. So I don't see them going anywhere. I see it obviously as a blow for them, but I definitely don't see them leaving IndyCar because of it.
Yes, I agree with Jess. I don't think they're going to go anywhere. They were definitely overwhelmed with the third car. Pato didn't really seem to have any speed for the most part, even before his accident. So, and the one thing I heard from somebody in the media center this week, that despite Max Chilton's dad not working, you know, as some sort of executive at Gallagher anymore, he still has ties within the company. So I don't think the money problem will come up for, at least for Chilton, and Chilton money kind of helps that team run. So they should be more than fine there.
And kind of on top of that, so there was a rumor out of left field that Carlin may have replaced Charlie Kimball with Max Chilton or Pato Award. Credit where credit's due. Charlie Kimball qualified in the middle of the seventh row, and then the rest of his team is going home. And that is, to me, that's one of the biggest under-the-radar storylines from the whole weekend, was how well Charlie Kimball did compared to the rest of his team. But, Mike, should Carlin have replaced Kimball?
No, he was the most consistent driver all week in practice. I don't know if, you know, off the top of my head, if he ran, you know, in the top 10 any day in practice, but he was always consistent. He was never near the bottom. Didn't really place the car wrong all week. Qualified respectably, where he didn't have to worry about going back out there and, you know, putting another qualifying attempt in. And as much as, you know, I would like to see, you know, Pato race in the 500 as a rookie this year. You know, listen, sometimes rookies have to pay their due, and drivers have to pay their dues. And you know, Kimball's been the, you know, such a classy guy all week, and it would be a real shame to pull him out of the car.
Yeah, I agree that Kimball should be in the car. It goes back to that whole, like, you made it, you deserve to be there. And the other guys, unfortunately, didn't. Award, I feel, and I said it several times during the week, watching his lines and just listening to him talk, he was not comfortable at all in the car. And I don't know that that would have been something that would have been easy to remedy with a little bit more seat time or whatnot. But he was just clearly not comfortable. I don't think he was ready for this. Chilton, I was frustrated with him. I was frustrated with him because every time they talked to him, it was like, oh, I gave everything, absolutely everything that I had, and it's the car. So he pretty much blamed everybody but himself. And I don't know that he was wrong, but it seemed like there was probably something that wasn't going right for him. So yeah, I don't think they should have replaced him. I feel like Kimball earned it fair and square, and let him go. Let him see what he can do.
100%. And my friend Adrian, who's at IndyCar UK, tweeted out Charlie Kimball's results at the Indy 500, and he's actually one of the better drivers in the field when it comes to just getting a good result going at Indy. So I think he's one of those under the radar guys, and I would definitely not have replaced him, especially since he earned his spot in the field. So good discussion there. And then one more thing before we transition here is, you know, the facets of the racing world are always changing. One thing that did happen, in the month of May, and, or maybe right before the month of May, was the news with Pato Award. He was invited and accepted into the Red Bull Junior program, very famous for getting guys up into Formula One like Sebastian Vettel, Carlos Sainz, Max Verstappen, Pierre Gasly, Danny Kvyat, drivers like that. And so my question to you, Jess, is, you know, Pato obviously didn't make the field, and there's a very strong chance that he could be at the very least participating in some free practice one sessions this year with Toro Rosso. Is there a good chance that we might not see Pato at the Indy 500 next year or in future years?
Yeah, I don't see him next year at Indy. It's kind of a shame. I would have liked to see him run, but like I said, I think he was very uncomfortable. So I would hate to see that translate into a bad run. I would like to see him run, but I'd like it to be good. So I think it would be very disappointing if it wasn't. But yeah, I see him going to Europe and saying goodbye to us, unfortunately.
I think the only way that Pato is in the 500 next year is if he has a really, really strong second half of the season. And even then, I don't think it's particularly likely.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer, really, like Jess said, because, you know, it would be kind of cool to see him. And it's not for certain that he'll end up in Formula One, but at the very least, I see him going to, you know, like an F2 or an F3 or something next year. So it's kind of a bummer, but time will tell, I guess. But that is kind of our wrap on Bump Day there. So we'll toss it over to Mike for some Patreon shout-outs.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for subscribing. Go through the top half of the list here. Thank you, Colin Taylor, Darcy Bretz, David Lighting, our buddy George, Jake Neely. Thank you, Jason Camps and Carrie Chim. Thank you, Lyndall McMurphy, and our newest patron, Mark Van Niekerk, Matt Grunholds, and Michael Goodyear. Thank you all.
Yeah, and our discussions and messages, our Patreon messages have been really cool this last couple of weeks. A lot of good discussions there, so we appreciate that. Real quick, we'll touch on the Fast 9. Obviously, it's kind of cool to see the Fastest 9 go for the pole shootout. In the front row is Simon Pagenaud, followed by Ed Carpenter and Spencer Pigot. Jones, Herta, Power, Bourdais, Newgarden, and Rossi make up the rest. Who was your biggest surprise out of there, Mike?
Scott Dixon starting 18th is definitely my biggest surprise. You know, not only is he not in the Fast 9, but on his first and second attempt, he never really was close to being in the Fast 9.
I'm going to say my biggest surprise was Ed Jones. Obviously, he's in a Carpenter car, and that bodes well for him, but I still was a little shocked at how well he did.
Yeah, I mean, with Scuderia Corsa, it's like you didn't know what to expect or anything like that, but to see him do super well was really cool. I was pretty surprised with Sebastian Bourdais in a coin car getting up there. That's super cool, and obviously we know what happened in the year he had this crash. I think that was, 2017, that, you know, was on a pole run before a crash. So I think it was still surprising to see him come out and do as well as he did, especially since his teammates were a little further down the field. Out of the Fast 9, Jess, who do you chalk up as the most disappointing?
Man, that's a tough question. I'd probably say Rossi, honestly. I felt like he really had a good car all week. So I really thought that he would be up there kind of fighting for the pole. So I think he's probably, out of those nine, my biggest disappointment.
I would go, since I always pick him to win, I'm going to pick him as my disappointment. And maybe he'll win because of this, but, you know, Will Power, who had such a strong run on Saturday, and then for the Fast 9 shootout, didn't really have a run that was top three, you know, was a top three contender at any point in the lap. So that's definitely disappointing because, you know, obviously Will Power is Will Power, and he always seems to pull a pole position out of nowhere on the last lap of qualifying.
Yeah, I meant to give you grief about that, because I was listening in Iceland. So you picked Power to win the Grand Prix and he didn't win, which is the third time you've done that this year, I think, right?
Just don't tell our buddy Fo Will.
Okay. And then you said that Foyt would struggle at Grand Prix, which I've told you not to do in the past because they're like the low-hanging fruit, as we like to say on the show. And then Laced goes out there and finishes fifth or something?
Fourth, yeah. Fourth. I did not have a good pre-Grand Prix prediction.
Well, it makes it feel better. My predictions always suck. So, I was surprised. I thought you'd go with Newgarden. So, I'll go with Newgarden. I thought to be the lowest of the Penske's in the fast nine. I thought that was kind of strange for him to finish eighth there. Kind of doubly disappointing that Cash Neves didn't make it either. But for eighth out of ninth, I thought that was kind of a weird one. But I think row three is looking pretty good for the race. So Rossi definitely has a lot less ground to make up than he did last year, which is kind of a bummer for us because maybe that'll mean less exciting restarts for him. But yeah, I think anybody in that fast nine can do a really good job. As far as we'll actually just go straight to Saturday. So that was where we set positions 10 through 30 for sure. So they were locked into the field. Mike, I know you said that one of your disappointments was Scott Dixon. Did you have an honorable mention that you would want to throw in there?
Let's see here. I'm looking at the list. Yeah, Ryan Hunter-Reay in 22nd would be another honorable mention. Sorry if I stole anybody's pick there, but you know, another, you know, typically strong driver at the track, former winner, and wasn't super competitive with a 227.877 average.
Let's see here. This is a tough one because I think there are several that could be my disappointment. This one's going to probably strike you guys as a little odd, but I'm going to go with Connor Daly. Not because he did super poor. Obviously, starting 11th is really good. However, coming out of Fast Friday with a huge time, I really thought he would kind of squeak his way into the top nine there and kind of shock everybody. So I think that was probably my disappointment for Saturday.
Yeah, and his first run on Saturday wasn't all that impressive either, so I was kind of surprised by that. Well, so we'll get to our biggest surprise. And so mine's going to be all in one row here. So my two disappointments and biggest surprise will be all in one row. And that's going to be row 10. So the disappointing side, I'm really disappointed. Zach Veach inside of row 10. I don't know what is going on with that team this year. I don't know if it's an engineering thing. I don't know if it's a driver thing. But to be in the Andretti stable and to be all the way back there is kind of a head scratcher. I'm not going to lie. Hopefully we can see some life out of him in the race, but this is, I'm starting to get a little nervous. I'm not quite hitting the panic button yet, but I'm starting to get a little twitchy. Felix Rosenquist, another one, you know, Ganassi ride. I know he wrecked a car. I know Scott Dixon himself isn't all that far up the grid, but you know, even for being a rookie, I still kind of expect a little bit out of him. To me right now, he's kind of at the level that Ed Jones is at Indy last year. And we know what happened with Jones. So, I know it's his first oval, but I still expect him, with all the practice that he has, to get up to speed pretty quick and do better than the middle of row 10. But then switching to surprise, you know, I think we've all been saying for quite some time now, especially when it was announced that Pippa Mann would be one of those easy bottom three bumps from the field. I know you two had said it on the show. And not to like throw you guys under the bus, because I absolutely would have agreed with both of you guys that Pippa Mann would have been, I know, I mean, she would have been one of my locks for bottom six, just like you guys were talking about. So I'm not going to sit here and say I wouldn't have said that. She would have been one of my easy locks for sure, her and Ben Hanley. And for her to come out with a brand new team, partnered with Dale Coyne, who's not really a powerhouse team, and to, you know, safely secure yourself in that first day. Fantastic. I think she deserves a lot of credit, a lot of courage too, to come back last year getting bumped to this year. You know, it's not easy showing up to Speedway because there's got a lot of nerves going on, but to make the field, she had a pretty good practice week. Her no-toe speeds were good. Her race car looks okay, but just to make the field for her, I think, was a pretty big achievement. And, you know, I think she deserves a lot of credit for what she did. For your guys' biggest surprise, Jess, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to pick another one that I said I believe would easily be locked into the bottom six. I'm going to say Ben Hanley. Obviously, he threw up quite a speed for as little experience as he's got, not only on ovals, but also just in the car in general. He just doesn't have that much experience in it. And to squarely put himself in on Saturday was quite impressive, in my opinion.
Well, since you both have stolen my other two, I have been scrambling as you were talking. I'm going to go with James Davison as my surprise. You know, not that he's in, you know, in the top 30. I thought that was a pretty safe bet, but you know, the fact he qualified 15th with kind of a, you know, hodgepodge team as the third car. And if you listen to our Davison interview that came out a couple days ago, you know, it sounds like there was no love lost for the Foyt equipment he had last year. So, you know, maybe Dale Coyne's got some good good oval equipment for James Davison this year. But for him to put up, you know, four really consistent laps and qualify 15th, it was definitely very impressive.
And a special shout out to another guy in that row, Marcus Ericsson, 13th. How about that for your first Indy 500? Leader of the Arrow Schmidt Peterson team with Servia, Hinch, and then kind of a technical alliance with Harvey as well. So good for him. And then, you know, this is, you know, Jay Fry and company tweaked the format this year. So this is kind of a reworking of the format that we saw from last year. Any likes or dislikes or anything you guys wanted to mention? This is voluntary, so you don't have to have an answer if you don't want to. But either, if either of you guys want to say anything about the format this year.
I thought it was fantastic.
Agreed. I think, you know, maybe we see some tweaks where the bottom six maybe get two attempts. But I think the format in this year as it was really great to watch. I watched it again on NBC Gold on my phone, laying in bed because it was so fun to watch live that I wanted to see how it played out on TV, and it was really cool. So I think Jay Fry and his team did a great job, and if there are minor tweaks, that's fine, but I think they hit a home run with this one.
And I guess the only thing I would change, because I agree it was awesome, fantastic, and it's really nitpicking, but if they had put the Fast 9 shoot up before Bump Day, I think that would add a little more drama to it. But yeah, that's such a ticky-tack thing, but otherwise it was a great job. And hopefully, you know, we talked about McLaren, hopefully putting that to bed for a while. Hopefully we can put this one to bed for a while, the whole fastest 33 debate. I know your answers anyways, but I'm just going to ask. Jess, any change of heart after the bump day of the fastest 33 debate?
If anything, bump day just solidified that I still want it to be the fastest 33. As disappointed as we all are that Alonso's not going to be in, I think everybody agrees that he just didn't have the equipment. He didn't have the, it wasn't his time, whatever, however you want to put it. And I think that made for one heck of a show.
Yeah. I have no change of heart at all.
Simple enough. Okay. So I know you guys have been at the track a lot, and I know that you guys have done, you know, like I said early on the episode, a great job of interviewing a bunch of people and getting a lot of great content out there. But anything behind the scenes that either of you two wanted to share with fans that we may have missed at home, or any funny stories you've seen at the track, or anything cool you wanted to share with the fans, Mike?
Oh boy. I'm trying to think. The crowds this year have been awesome. Even on, you know, what was a rainy Sunday, a ton of people stuck around. Saturday's crowd looked great. Even going back to maybe Thursday, when the crowd really started to pick up, there was a ton of people there. So I think everything in an attendance perspective is definitely going up for, you know, the regular practice days where maybe some people don't always come out, was much better this year. Funny story wise, nothing's really coming to mind.
You get yelled at a yellow shirt?
Yeah, I did. But we'll have to save that one for another time. But shout out to Jess, do you remember his name? The really cool yellow shirt guy that was really fun to talk to on pit lane on Saturday.
His name is Brian.
Yes. Shout out to yellow shirt. Brian was the nicest yellow shirt I have ever met. Super cool dude. And made me feel a little bit better after one of the yellow shirts yelled at me a little bit before.
Jess, anything to add?
So I have a good story, Mike. I can't believe you didn't throw me under the bus on this one. So after Saturday qualifying and Alonso was storming down the pit lane, as everybody saw on TV or on Gold, however you were watching, he stopped and he signed some fans for autographs. Fantastic. And then he took off. And TV made it look like he was walking at a fairly decent, you know, normal pace. No, he was like practically running. And I can tell you this because the whole media scrum that was following him was coming very fast down pit lane. And the two guys jumped out of the way and left me right in the middle of it all. So in order to save myself, not be on TV, save their shot, and not get killed, I pretty much bent down in fetal position and squealed like a little child as I just got run over by the whole line of everyone. But I survived. They survived. I was not on TV. Nobody fell. So it was all good.
You didn't go viral or anything like that?
No, I honestly, we got back up to the media center and the first thing I did was pull up NBC Gold to just make sure that I was not in there. And luckily I was not.
Yeah, I was pretty sure looking back and seeing Jess in the middle of the like giant TV cameras coming at her that we were going to be losing a co-host that day.
Oh, no. Well, Jess, I'm glad you're still with us. all right. The Indy 500. It's my favorite day of the year. It's like Christmas morning, the morning of. I know for sure you guys are going to have a blast getting there at 5:30 a.m. It's just such an iconic event, and honestly, it's the one of the coolest things of the year, and one of my favorite things in my life is going to the Indy 500. So we'll just look ahead to the race. I know that you guys had given your picks last week for the winners. If I remember correctly, Mike said Hildebrand and Jess, I'm drawing a blank.
Pretty sure I said Carpenter.
Carpenter. Okay.
Sounds right.
Have either of you guys changed your mind? Or are you sticking with those?
Jess?
I'm sticking with mine. I think he's got a good shot. For some reason, I've got this like just gut feeling that the homeboy is finally going to pull it out.
Well, I'm going to stick with my pick because that would be silly to change. You know, JR starting 21st, and I think his last qualifying run was much stronger and looked pretty good in traffic the other day. And maybe it is his chance at redemption this year.
Yeah, you'd look pretty bad if you changed it and then he ended up winning. That'd be kind of funny, actually. So I'll throw mine in there. I kind of am cheating a little bit just because I get to see what everybody qualified and whatnot. You guys didn't at the time when you made your picks. So credit where credit's due with your guys' picks. But I kind of like Jess where she has a gut feeling. I don't know. I kind of have a gut feeling about Colton Herta. He's looked solid all month. He's technically the fastest Andretti, quote-unquote, driver out there. His lines have looked good. He's looked consistent. He's looked solid. He's looked confident. He's got the Thanos hand. It just looks like one of those things. I don't know. I can't really put a pin on why I'm really high on him right now, but I think he can definitely be a strong contender for the race. As far as a dark horse, someone kind of under the radar, Jess, you got anybody you'd like to throw out there as far as a dark horse contender for the race?
I'm going to go with another hometown hero. I'm going to say Connor Daly. I think he had a pretty good month. He was always there with the speed, the consistency. I think he wants it just as bad as anybody else. So I'm going to go with Connor.
I'm going to go with my surprise of the qualifying weekend in James Davison. You know, he's a pretty aggressive driver and starting 15th, he doesn't have to work his way up from 32nd or 33rd. So if he can hang around the top 12, going into the last 40 laps or so, I think he'll be in a good position.
As far as my pick here, I wanted to say Graham Rahal. I don't know if I like that pick though, but there is a little bit of concern that I have with Elio Castroneves qualifying 12th. I know I'm not Elio's biggest fan, but I do respect the heck out of him at Indianapolis because obviously three-time winner, it pretty much does well every time he shows up there. It's only crashed twice, if my memory serves me correctly. But otherwise, he does really well there. But to see him kind of off the pace compared to his teammates and to see him starting 12th, which is pretty low by his standards, I'm a little concerned that he may not do as well in the race as his teammates, but I could be way off on that. So I don't know. It's either him or Rahal because Rahal also doesn't tend to show up very well at Indianapolis for whatever reason. It's kind of just been his Achilles heel all year. And then a real quick struggle prediction. Oh, sorry, we just did that. Best livery. I didn't get to do this last week. What you guys did. I'm going to throw in Willpower. That car is beautiful. I can't imagine what it looks like in person, but to see the black Penske kind of livery that's on the other cars there, Mike, does that car just look fantastic at the track?
Oh, it's awesome. Okay. I wait for the diecast to come out because I will be buying it.
Well, I think you and David Lighting should be pretty nervous for Sunday. There's some serious bets that could be paid out here if things go certain ways on Sunday.
Yeah, I might be buying a lot of Willpower diecast.
And then one quick thing to touch on is that racing, you know, obviously they did have that like race simulation practice after qualifying, and then just general practice all week. In my opinion, practice has looked pretty entertaining. There's been some definitely good action, especially on the, I think it was Monday practice. Definitely some good stuff. 100% good action. Rossi looked competitive. Hinch was passing people. Dixon was passing people. Jess, do you think what we've seen on track so far, do you think that is going to translate into the race as far as good action? I know you guys did touch on that as well with the, I think it was with Tanner, but based on the recent practice session that we got to witness, do you think that's going to bode well for the race?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's looking good. I think everybody's feeling pretty racy and they're going to be pretty comfortable in their cars this year, it seems. Obviously, there's a few people whom I'm a little concerned about how they feel with their car, and we might see them obviously struggle, fall back. But I think that it's going to be a lot of fun on Sunday.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think IndyCar has done a great job giving the team some extra aero pieces for the front and rear wing, and Firestone knocked it out of the park with the, you know, drastically different tire compound for the super speedways. So I think all of that is going to really help the racing.
Gosh, I'm just so excited. I just can't wait, especially after Monday's practice. It just looks so much fun out there. One quick thing about the weather. We have been getting a little bit of weather reports saying that the weather is not going to be favorable on Sunday. I tweeted out earlier today that you should not be panicking quite yet. In fact, you probably shouldn't be panicking until about Saturday. And even then, that might be a little too early. Rain or shine, I know Jess and Mike will be there for at the very least to, you know, meet up with anybody and say hi and whatnot. Do you guys have any sort of plans to have a meet up with peoples, or are you meeting with Jeff Gluck, or do you guys know what's happening there?
Probably when you're listening to this, we'll have something for race day, but at least if you're listening to this before the Freedom 100, we will be meeting up with a bunch of people in the Turn 1 grandstands to watch the Freedom 100. I don't have the grandstand in front of me here, but our buddy George was kind enough to pick a spot to sit. So we'll be doing that as well, and then probably something on race day. By the time you're listening to this on Friday or Saturday, it'll be on social media.
Yeah, and when in doubt, just message Mike or Jess, and they can definitely give you guys the details or whatnot. But Jess and Mike, you guys are the Indy experts and you guys have been there all week. We'll start with Jess. For anybody going for their first time, any advice on anything they should be doing before the race, or anything they should, you know, be prepared to expect, or any advice you give to someone coming for their first time at all for the first Indianapolis 500 out there?
Yeah, so a couple different things. The first thing you'll hear from pretty much every media person that will cover this race at all, you need to go early. It's a suggestion for a reason. People go early. You have to go through security. Obviously, getting 300,000 people roughly into the facility takes some time. You need to leave early. Second of all, I did see a thing, and I didn't actually see the sign, but I saw on Twitter today that somebody has posted a sign. IMS parking is sold out, guys. So you will, when you go early, if you do not have a parking pass already or have not prepaid your parking, you will have to be looking for parking. I think a lot of that has to do with the kind of unfortunate weather that we've been having here. The fields are just totally muddy, and there's no way to fix that by Sunday. So just be prepared. You know, a lot of the neighborhoods there around the track, people allow parking in their yards, so it might be worth going Saturday and prepaying for Sunday. That would be what I would do just to be on the safe side, but, you know, I know people wait until the last minute, and then they get upset when they don't get to see the start of the race.
All valid points. I think the only thing I'm going to add there is if you get up early enough, go to Charlie Brown's for breakfast. I went there with our buddy Tanner Watkins once, and I went there another time with Mr. Lighting and his friend from Wisconsin, and each time I had a fantastic meal. Great way to start off the morning, especially with a, you know, a long day. If there's a, you know, knock on wood, no rain delays, but if there's something along those lines, and just be patient. There's going to be a ton of people walking around. It's going to take you a little bit to get through the crowd. Everybody's trying to have a good time, and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah, just have some fun. I mean, just keep in mind that you'll just be witnessing history being born right in front of you. I mean, whoever wins the race, you know, goes down in history as an Indianapolis 500 winner. It's always cool to see a first-time winner do it, but, you know, even a repeat winner, it just adds to their legacy. So I always just have to pinch myself and remind myself that, you know, I'm watching something that we will be remembering for pretty much ever. And I'm really jealous of you two. Again, while I was gone, you guys did a great job. So thanks for holding down the fort and delivering great content to everybody. Really happy to be back, though. But I'll be jealous of you guys on Sunday for sure. And if we do, we have any other Indianapolis 500 thoughts before we sign it off?
Yay. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really good race. If you know, Monday's practice was any indication, it's going to be very competitive. I think you'll see a great battle for the lead, no matter who it is. And you know, if you're at the track super early, or if you're around the track on Saturday or on carb day, send one of us a message. We'll try to do as many group meetups as possible, and I know there's a ton of stuff going on, but we will make time for anybody that wants to say hello. And I guess if we don't have anything further, Jess, feel free to sign us off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
Weather forecast for the 103rd Indianapolis 500. I'm meteorologist Doug Schneider. There is a chance that at least a portion of the race will be affected by rain. On Sunday morning and early afternoon, there's just a slight chance of a few showers in the area, but the threat of showers and thunderstorms will be increasing as we go through the afternoon. The chance of rain at the speedway after 2 p.m. is 50%, so it is possible that there could be a rain delay. Another factor will be the winds, which will be from the southwest around 10 miles an hour, but could be gusting up to 20 miles an hour at times. The morning low temperature will be in the upper 60s with an afternoon high temperature around 80 degrees. For the most up-to-date forecast and a live radar feed for the speedway, visit racecastweather.com.